administration and its corporate allies. Once again, the URL for the site is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And as you can tell from the sound of my voice, I have another phone interview here, and I have a very special guest in the in studio, Al, with me on the phone. His name is Mark. Is it Perkel or Perkel?
Perkel.
I'm sorry. I've always thought it was Perkel. I always have that first syllable.
A lot of people
thing.
Make that mistake.
Yeah. Mark Perkel. And Mark, I've kind of sort of known, not in person, but he's been an active player in left-wing internet stuff for a long, long time, and he is the one whose server hosts Bart Cop of Bart Cop fame. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How's things up in Frisco?
Well, things are good here. I'm actually a little bit south of San Francisco, near the San Francisco airport, in a little place called San Bruno, California.
Okay. I have slight familiarity with that area. I used to spend some time at the Defense Language Institute up at Monterey. And I know the Salinas and all that area, Carmel by the Sea and all those places. Clint Eastwood used to be mayor of that, wasn't he, for a while?
I think he still is.
He might be still in?
I'm not sure, but I think he still is Mayor Carmel.
That's interesting, because I remember when he was first running for it. Of course, any time a celebrity runs like that, they tend to have an easier time, because they all have instant name recognition. At least today, anyway. Back in the 40s and 50s, celebrities had a harder time running for public office, because I guess people thought differently that way. Maybe they didn't think politics and entertainment should mix, but now it's all politics and entertainment. Let's talk a little bit about Bart Cop, because Bart Cop was the first big website that I got involved with. Now you've known him personally for quite some time, haven't you?
I first came across Bart Cop back in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing his rant by email. He'd just type it up, it'd be pure text, and he'd email it off to the list, and somewhere around show 57 or something like that, somebody, you know, who knew me, you know, grabbed, you know, about three of his things and emailed it to me, and it was the funniest thing that I'd ever seen. You know, I was rolling on the floor laughing. And, you know, I tracked the guy down, and I said, hey, you know, I want to put I got a web server here. I want to turn these things into web pages and put them on the Internet. You know, and at that time, you know, Bart, you know, didn't even really know what a web server the Internet was. You know, all he knew was email. So, you know, he'd send them, and for the first probably 200 issues, you know, I'd turn them into web pages for him, and it was originally hosted at ctime.com/BartCop, and then we got the BartCop name, and eventually he took over himself, and I've been hosting it ever since.
So how many other people do you have on your servers? I know you host several other people. What else do your servers do?
I've got about 200 websites on.
Wow.
Right now. Of course, some of them are mine, you know, churchofreality.org, flagburning.org, perkel.com, which is my personal index, you know, and then I've got, I host the email for Creative Commons, I host John Dvorak's website, a PC magazine, Larry Lessig's, you know, got about 10 websites on my server of, Creative Commons, and, well, Creative Commons itself isn't on my server, but he does a lot of intellectual property work. I've got a federal judge on my server.
Wow.
I'm kind of a host to the stars. You know?
Host to the stars.
You know, some of the most, you know, famous prostitutes in the world are on my server, you know.
Okay, well, we won't publicize that too much. I was curious, what do you do for a living, if I might ask? Is that how you make your living primarily, or do you have a regular 9-to-5 type job?
No, I'm self-employed. I do a variety of things. A lot of it comes from advertising on my own websites. I get a little bit of money hosting. I do front-end spam filtering for people. You know, I've got one of the best spam filters on the planet that I've developed. And, you know, some miscellaneous computer consulting, you know, a little software development every now and then.
So you do a lot of work from home, and you get to travel around and do all sorts of neat stuff.
Yeah, and it gives me flexibility on time, too, because, you know, I can, you know, take days off if I want to, and I can, you know, work at midnight if I want to. So
cool. I mean, that rocks. I mean, I just got laid off, and I had a crappy job, and, you know, I do this show on a hairstring budget, or a shoestring budget, I should say, and, you know, it's when I was working, and I just got let go just before Christmas, and when I was working, it was a pain in the butt to try to get two shows done a week, especially the Thursday show, because, you know, when you get home from work, especially when you work in a steel manufacturing plant, you're friggin' tired, you know?
Right.
And but it's really nice when you hear about people who can go out and do the sort of things. I wish I can do what you do. I have absolutely no clue how to make money using the web. Some people just don't have a mind for that. It's all, like, right over my head. So I'm glad you can do it.
Well, I've been self-employed all my life, pretty much.
Really?
Yeah, and I'm just used to it. To me, you know, being self-employed is security.
Did you come from a rich family, or did you come into a bunch of money when you were younger? Did you just get, like, business loans, or how did you get started doing that?
No. I was actually raised poor. I guess had a knack for it. I did have a few real jobs back when I was a teenager. You know, up until when I was 19, you know, and then I started fixing CB radios. And, you know, I'd just go out to truck stops, you know, and walk around the lot fixing CB radios and doing things like that.
Wow.
I got into, you know, pinball machine repair and, you know, video arcade machines. And, you know, then I got a computer and I started developing software. And then I opened up a computer store back in 1984 and ran that for 6 years. You know, I had two computer stores total and sold them off, and then I got into the software business, and then I ended up getting divorced and lost everything there, and, you know, then I started developing the web stuff, and, you know, and then a couple years ago I had my first real job in 20 years. I was working for as a system administrator for the Electronic Frontier Foundation for almost 3 years. So
you've been around, you've been a lot of... been a lot of places, done a lot of interesting things along those lines. And it's been, I mean, you lost it all in a divorce, but you came and you got it right back, or at least you got back on your feet somewhat.
Yeah, and in the process of that, you know, I learned a lot about law. You know, I started representing myself in court, and then, you know, I wanted to get some attention on some things with the justice system. So I ran for Congress in 98 as a Democrat. And then in 2000, I ran for United States Senate as a Republican against John Ashcroft in the primary. So I'm the guy who lost to the guy who lost to the dead guy.
Well, John, you were running, obviously you weren't living in California at the time.
No,
Ashcroft.
I was living in Missouri.
Okay, because I was asked.
You know, it was the last day to sign up. John Ashcroft was unopposed, and he was on Bush's short list of people who might get picked for vice president at that time. So I thought, well, I'll run against him, and if Ashcroft gets picked, then I become the Republican candidate for United States Senate for the state of Missouri because I'm the only one on the ballot.
How did you get into the Republican Party? Did they have any idea about your background when you registered as a Republican?
No, I didn't even register as a Republican. You know, in Missouri you don't have to register by party. Basically, in Missouri, if you're over 30 years old, you know, $200, Missouri driver's license, and signing your name twice, you're a candidate. It's that easy.
Hmm.
So I drove up to Jeff City with $200 and signed up, and I had 38,000 Republicans voted for me.
What kind of percentage was that?
11%.
Oh, okay.
But I did better than Alan Keyes did in his last race, you know. So
well, Keyes running, you know, against Obama?
Yeah, he only got 10%, you know. And he's, you know, spent money and put out effort, you know.
And
I didn't
put
out no effort whatsoever.
You just put your name, you just registered yourself, and that was
it. I ran it strictly for the reason that if for some reason that John Ashcroft did get picked for vice president, then I become the Republican candidate. It was that simple.
Freaky.
It was $200, and I thought, well, that's worth it. I'll get $200 worth of public speaking experience out of it. And fun and amusement, you know, and I did, you know. I mean, I got a lot of fun and amusement out of it.
So you see, ladies and gentlemen, all you have to do is show up sometimes, depending on the race, and you can get 10-11% of the vote. It just goes to show where things are in this country today.
In 98, when I ran against the Democrat, you know, I signed up in the primary and nobody else signed up, you know, and there I am on a major party ticket running against Roy Blunt, you know, because nobody else signed up, so I made it into the general election on that one.
Wow.
And that one was just $100.
How many votes did you get there?
43,000.
And what was the percentage?
24% of the vote.
And you got 24%. And did you do anything? Did you do any major advertising? Spend a lot of money?
I didn't do anything.
You're just there. You just showed up and you got 24% of the vote.
Well, you know, I gave a lot of interesting interviews. I was running on the platform of legalizing pot and prostitution. And, of course, that was also the year that, you know, when Clinton admitted that he did, in fact, have sex with that woman. And, you know, so, you know, I had media call me up, you know, saying, you know, are there any skeletons in your sexual closet? Oh, you bet there are. I got pictures and everything. You know, put me on the air. I'll tell you where life comes from, you know. And then they didn't want to talk to me, you know. I mean,
you would think they'd jump at that.
I was going to explain the birds and the bees. I was going to tell them exactly why Clinton did what he did, you know. You know, it's that the reason Clinton did what he did was because, you know, it's a 3-billion-year-old tradition, you know, and that's why the human race is here, you know. You know, this isn't really something that's optional, and his body had an election and his brain lost. You know?
Oh, that's I like that. I gotta remember that. His body had an election and his brain lost. That's good.
Yeah.
That's what
happened. Because, you know, I mean, Clinton knew better. You know, and Clinton knows he knew better. When he got caught, you know, he looks back and says, I can't believe I did it either. So,
especially since he knew everybody and his uncle was looking at him, you know. I mean, he knew he was under such a microscope. I mean, how could he not?
Yeah, you know, he knew better. But, you know, it just goes to show you that, you know, there's certain instincts that are stronger than logic. And, you know, and that's the reason the human race exists, you know. If we had the kind of self-control that we're supposed to have, we would have been extinct millions of years ago.
Perhaps. I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, I mean, there are people, you know, who have risen above their desires, but those people are not our ancestors. You know, we're the descendants of the ones who didn't rise above their desires.
I saw a science show once where it said the human race at one time was down to something like 50 or 60,000 people, and that all of us come from that group, small group of 50, 60,000, that there was some major environmental changes that took place that nearly wiped us out completely, and we just barely survived.
Yeah. And actually, you know, if you go back far enough, they've done some work where actually all the descendants of some female individual, you know, about 4 million years ago, you know, that they could trace, you know, it all back to one, you know, creature.
I don't know about that. I have a little trouble with that. But then again, you never know.
It's not like it's just that one, and, you know, she mated with men, you know, several males, you know, and so forth. But, they actually have technology that, you know, I mean, there's certain, you know, with evolution, as time goes on, you know, there's certain mutations that, you know, have certain advantages, you know, and that mutation gets passed on, you know, as it becoming the dominant feature. And so that's probably happened, you know, many, many times in the history of humanity, is that, you know, a certain individual, you know, generated a certain characteristic, and that characteristic became dominant, you know, to where, you know, eventually the entire species had that feature.
Well, I wish we could have a little bit more control over that. Unfortunately, the too many women are having babies by guys that really have no business giving birth or having fathers.
give it 50 years, we'll have total control over it. You know, in 50 years, I expect that they'll have the technology down to where we can custom build life any way we want.
And then we will get the Aryan society that we so much want. You know, the brown people will wither away.
Well,
they'll continue to have babies, but they'll probably be enslaved by the Aryan types.
who knows? You know, what we'd be able to produce is, you know, some of the things they're doing with genetic engineering now. You know, they're crossing genetics between, you know, tomatoes and moths.
Well, you know,
a tomato that doesn't rot.
You know what I always say, that I look at the way biotechnology, and I think biotechnology is the real way of the future, as well as the communications technology that we have with the web. But I really honestly believe that in the future, products will be manufactured by being grown. I mean, I'm sure they'll be able to develop a way. Like, if you want ivory, they can just recreate that part of the elephant that grows the tusk. You know what I mean?
They'll be able to do that.
And maybe you can even have things that could take like metal dust or something like that and turn it into actual bodies and stuff like that. And they can have a process where that's speeded up enough so that it's almost like a regular production line. You know.
Well, the future holds great promise and great fear, depending on the kind of choices we make. You know, and that's one of the reasons that I started the Church of Reality. That's what I was just going to bring up. Aware, you know, of the choices that we have before us, and be able to come up with, you know, an ethical solution before the problem occurs.
Now let's talk about that, because that is really the main reason I wanted to talk to you. And I heard you on Mike Malloy the other night, and you were talking about that. He had a great line, by the way, that you said, "Reality made you; you didn't make reality."
I kind of thought of that on the fly, you know.
Yeah, that's a great quote. I like that. Mike, I remember, stopped and wrote it down. Oh, wait, I got to write that down. Yeah. But let's talk about the origins of it. What made you want to start this thing up, and how do you do a church based on, essentially, secularism?
Well, it's like I said, you know, the church is dedicated to reality the way it really is. And, you know, that's the whole theme of the church. It's all about reality. So, you know, it's about the exploration of reality and it being, you know, truthful and honest. You know, we want to know what's really going on. You know, I mean, you got all these different religions and they got all their different books and they say these different things and they go to war over property that, you know, they claim that God gave them. But, you know, is there really a God, and did he really give, you know, Jews this property or Arabs this property, or, you know, what's really going on? You know?
Does God really hate fags and stuff like that,
Reverend
Phelps says?
And also, the great questions as to why does anything exist?
Life, the universe, and everything.
Right.
42, if you believe Doug Adams.
So the Church of Reality, you know, is about, you know, again, dedication toward, you know, reality the way it really is. In order for us to explore reality, you know, we have to evolve in a positive direction. You know, we have to move forward. You know, the tree of knowledge, which represents the sum total of all human understanding, has to grow. Because, like I said, on Mike Malloy's show, you don't build a Hubble telescope in your backyard and launch it into space yourself. This
right.
is something that's done by societies.
Right. That's where the libertarians completely misunderstand how humans do things. We do things by building communities and by working together. The Federal Highway System was not built by a single person. It was built by a large group of people working towards that goal.
Well, in fact, when you look around, you know, at everything, you know, that we're talking on the telephone, you know, we have all this equipment with this furniture, the building. How much of the stuff that you can look at did you build yourself?
Well, none of it, of
Almost
course.
Almost none of it.
I mean, it was all created by other people. You're probably familiar with that James Burke's outstanding documentary. I couldn't think of the word. Connections, if you remember that from TV, and how all these completely seemingly unrelated events created some of the inventions that we have today, how the computer came about partly from our need to knitting machines, sewing machines back then, where it had like little punch cards where it would slide down and it would make a certain pattern based upon a card that you put in with holes in. And they use a similar type of technology to tabulate information about people coming in from Ellis Island. You know, and a lot of different things. And it's just really remarkable in how those things happen. Now, I want to bring this up because we talk about religion as being of faith. But really, what you're talking about is what they call a type C faith. Are you familiar with type A, type B, and type C faiths?
No, I'm not.
James Randi pointed this out. He didn't create it, but he mentioned it in one of his books about faith healers. And he said there's basically three types of faith, type A, type B, and type C. Type A is what a fundamentalist is. Basically, you have faith in something that you can't prove, and even if something comes along to completely disprove it, you know, if you were to see it with your own eyes, you would still believe it. You would still refuse to accept that it was wrong. That's a type A faith. That's really a form of insanity, as far as I'm concerned.
The interesting thing is that the human brain is basically wired, you know, to become part of community and to your instinct to link up into community is far stronger than logic.
Right, right. Well, the type A is just a completely unshakable in total. And a type B is kind of more along those lines. It's almost like a type B faith is kind of like, well, my dad voted Republican, my granddad voted Republican, so therefore I'm going to vote Republican. What was good enough for them is good enough for me. See what I'm saying? And the type C type of faith is a faith based upon empirical knowledge. For example, I can drop a pen to the floor, and I don't have to look at it to know that it's going to fall, because every time you drop it, it falls. You know, it's a type of faith that's built upon observation. You know, it's kind of like the whole thing about evolution. I mean, they talk about it as a theory, but of course a scientific theory is completely different than a philosophical theory. It's not something somebody made up. It's a premise built upon a foundation of already known facts.
Yeah, well, evolution is central to the Church of Reality.
Right.
I mean, the Church of Reality is all about evolution. It's a matter of taking control of our evolution and taking responsibility. And and making a decision to guide our evolution in the direction that we want it to go.
So why build a religion around it, though? That's my question. And Mike asked you the same question. Why build a religion around it rather than just calling it secularism or whatever you want to call it?
Well, the reason to build a religion around it is to give a religious identity to realists. When somebody asks you what religion you are, and you say atheist, that doesn't talk about what you believe in. That talks about what you don't believe in.
Right.
You see, there isn't any word out there, you know, that represents, you know, what somebody who's a realist believes in until now. You know, now you have the Church of Reality, you know. And the Church of Reality is more than just the belief in reality. The Church of Reality is about evangelizing reality. We want to make reality part of everybody's daily lives. Because when reality is part of the decision-making, when reality permeates society, then we evolve forward and we can, you know, explore the universe and we can build Hubble telescopes and, you know, move out into space and understand, you know, more about the way reality really is. You know, and the thing that defines the human race, you know, who we are and what we are, is our shared knowledge. You know, the reason that we do the things we do is we have all this technology, which is common knowledge, you know, that is owned by the human race in general. The very language that we're using, the fact that we're talking to each other, we're using words that was invented by other people. So, you know, this is what makes us who we are, and if we evolve in a positive direction, then who we are becomes better than who we are now. So, and this is a religious choice, because other religions envision Armageddon as and the destruction of the world as the future, you know. But we have made a choice to envision the future as being better than it is today.
Right. It's something a very progressive point of view.
Yeah, and it speaks to, you know, what is it we believe? You know, there's a lot of people, you know, most of the planet believes fictional religions, you know, that they identify with. You know, if they say, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Buddhist, I'm a Jew, you know, those are all fictional religions, you know, based on, you know, ancient books, you know, written by people who were, you know, doing the best they could, you know, with what they had to work with, you know, but they just didn't really know very much about the way the universe worked. So this is a new religion, you know, and it's a religion based on reality. And it basically, you know, creates, you know, the same type of cult framework, you know, that other religions are based on, you know, but this is, you know, a cult that, you know, believes in reality instead of, you know, a fictional religion.
Now, you consider yourself the Pope of the Church of Reality, is that correct?
Well, my title is the first one. But,
first one.
You know, I'm the guy who came up with the idea.
Okay,
so,
fair enough. How many people are in the leadership of the church?
Well, officially there are two other people who are on the board of directors, which, you know, we call the Council of Realists, you know, and that's what we needed in order to apply for the 501c3 status with the IRS.
And so you have filed as an official religion.
Yeah, I have an application. It's still pending to, you know, get a 501c3 IRS status. And the other people have, you know, done it before. They both have their own organizations and their lawyers, you know, so they knew how to do this sort of things. And
who are the other people, if I can ask? It's not a secret, is it? Is it a secret?
No. One woman, her name is Robin Gross, and she has an organization called IP Justice, which deals with international intellectual property rights. And the other one is Deborah Pierce, who has her organization is privacyactivism.org, and she does work to protect people's privacy online. So, and they both used to work together with me at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, you know, which is another not-for-profit organization that is kind of like the ACLU of high technology. They are there to protect your online rights, you know, and you know, the email is private, and you know what the government can spy on and what they can't spy on, and encryption rights and things like that. So that's the three of us make up the official part of the Church of Reality, and then, of course, you know, we got all the readers of the website and people who have joined the email list, and, you know, a little bit of money that I donated, and a few other people kicked in a little bit, and that's basically where we're at the moment. It's more of a concept than it is, you know, a
You're still in, still in the embryonic stages,
it
so
is,
to speak.
But I feel like, you know, it's at the right place at the right time, because we're in the middle of what, you know, some people see as, you know, a takeover of America by Christianity, where the Christians, or a very small group of Christians, you know, basically the Moonies, have taken over control of the government and now wants to start, you know, forcing creationism, you know, into schools and excluding, you know, the science of evolution.
Right.
And things
in fact,
like that, you know.
They equate, they, you know, and that's the thing, they equate evolution as if it was a religious belief. And people ask me if I believe in evolution. I say it's not a question of belief. It's a known fact. I mean, there's some quibbling about the details, but, you know, what,
yeah,
what's happened is, you know, has been proven both with biology, with genetics, with zoology, with archaeology, not archaeology, geology.
Well, and you know, if you're a farmer, you know, I mean, you know, breeding animals is basically controlled evolution.
Right. Well, every breed of dog we have was created by humans. They came from wolves, and every single breed of dog has been created in the few thousand years since humans have domesticated dogs.
Right. And look how different these dogs are than wolves.
Right. Of course, now my wife would argue that they're still dogs, regardless of whether you're talking about a Great Dane or Chihuahua. They can still mate and they can still breed offspring. But there does come a point after a while where things kind of split off. I mean, it takes a long time in complex animals like mammals.
I don't know. I think if you took a coyote and tried to breed it to a Chihuahua, that you'd have a hard time getting that to work.
Well, I don't know if a coyote is a different species, I think, than a wolf, because wolves are the basis of all the dogs.
It's still sort of a dog. You see, that's the thing is there aren't any.
Well,
like,
they're both mammals,
there.
And they're both from the canine family or whatever.
Right.
You know, you couldn't mix a dog and a cat, for example, because they're two different families.
Right.
But we all have, all dogs are basically come from wolf stock. I don't know enough about, you know, the specific biology to say where right. were coyotes and
but
the other
coyotes
stolen.
And wolves, you know, have a common ancestor. You know.
Oh yeah, they're, like I said,
there.
they're both mammals. I mean, I tried to explain it to my wife like it was a highway. If you look at a highway with all sorts of branching roads, and if you take one road and just follow it backwards, you'll eventually find roads to lead you everywhere. You know, back to that one big road where everything began.
Well, in fact, you know, religions, you know, are also evolving. You know, Christianity today is not like what it was years ago.
Exactly. I mean,
you know,
I think
it's something that changes, and you have these different branches of Christians, and they, you know, they fight amongst themselves. You know, and some go, you know, disappear, and others become dominant.
Right. Even so, within the same religion, you get these different sects and offshoots.
And it's all about, you know, so religion, you know, is evolving. And one of the things the Church of Reality does is to help other religions evolve in a positive direction, too. Because, you know, Christians and Muslims, you know, start a nuclear war, you know, realists, you know, get to die along with them, you know.
Okay, so now you have three people in the Council of Realists.
Right.
Do you have any priests yet? Or,
I don't have a priest structure yet. I haven't yet figured that out.
Well, but how many members do you have? How many people who are regulars on the board or are officially signed up for it?
There are, you know, maybe 250 members on the email list.
Okay.
And then there's, you know, tens of thousands of people who have seen it, you know, and people who, you know, agree that, you know, yes, realism, that's me, you know, that's my religion, you know,
mm-hmm.
This guy has invented my religion, he's given a name to what I believe in, you know.
Now,
so,
do you want to see a big thing where you eventually have your own, like Vatican or stuff like that, a big building where you all convene and mm-hmm. can issue edicts back and forth about stuff, or how do you envision that for the future?
Well, I envision that at some point we will be in an organization of some sort, but it's mostly a church of the mind, you know. If I can get everybody in the country to have heard the name Church of Reality and have a vague idea that it's a religion that's based on believing in everything that's real, and it causes them to ask the sacred question, what is real, and start to, you know, question their own religions and beliefs and their country and the way of life and what's really going on, and reality becomes, you know, a more dominant part of their life, then that is accomplishing the goal of the Church of Reality, because the Church of Reality is all about spreading, you know, realism and making reality important.
Is it? It's not about being Like, for example, the way in science fiction, the Vulcan Society turned to logic and science as opposed to an emotional take on how to run government. They chose logic and science over that. It's not kind of like the same thing. You don't want people to get rid of their emotions completely.
No, it's not about, you know, getting rid of your emotions. It's about understanding your emotions. You know, it's about, you know, figuring out, you know, how your brain works, you know, so you can understand, you know, the science of delusion.
Right.
You know, so that you're, you know, somewhat insulated, you know, from those, you know, who would take advantage of your emotions in order to get you to believe in things that aren't real.
Cool. You know, that would be a very good religion for the radical middle. I don't know if you've read the Radical Middle book by Mark Satin. I interviewed him on the show, and he talks about politics rather than from the left and the right from a very realistic point of view. And it seems to me that the Church of Reality would be a good organization for a radical middle politician.
Well, it would be. I think that, see, that's why I think it's timely, because when you're in a situation where, you know, basically, you know, a coalition of you know, extreme right wing Christians and corporate, you know, interests, you know, have seized control of the country by stealing elections, you know, and we have fraudulent voting systems, and you have everybody else who's out here isolated, you know, and you know, and the Christians are basically saying, you know, we're gonna control the Supreme Court, we're gonna control the judges, and we're gonna force, you know, our religion down your throats. One of the responses to that is say, no, we are, you know, the Church of Reality, and we believe in reality the way it really is, and we believe in realism, you know, and you do not hold the moral high ground. You know, we realists hold the moral high ground, and our sacred principles are better than your Ten Commandments. And it gives, you know, people who are politically oppressed a way to answer these religions and say, look, you know, you are not taking over. You know, you are not going to force, you know, your fiction down our throats, because reality is stronger than fiction.
Right. You're not planning on destroying the other religions. You just want to put them in a place where they deserve to be, as kind of a side thing, not controlling the government, not forcing themselves on other people.
No, what I want to do is I want to create, you know, I want to change the evolution of other religions to get them to evolve in a positive direction rather than a negative direction, because right now, you know, Christianity and Islam is going into a very negative direction, you know, and you got two religions that are going to war with each other. And then you have the Christians, you know, there, or the Jews on the side, you know, and they're going to war, you know, and you know, so.
Well, you know, it's really,
it's basically they're going insane, you know. So the Church of Reality, you know, you know, their first imperative mission is to bring these other religions back to insanity by pointing out reality.
Well, it seems to me that you're less fighting religion than you're fighting fundamentalism, which is a really completely different thing. And I mean, you see, to me, there's no difference between you know, a hardcore fundamentalist Christian who's willing to blow up an abortion clinic and a hardcore fundamentalist Muslim who wants to blow up an Iraqi election center. You know what I mean? It's
right.
All the same basic psychology. It's just applied in different ways. It's like the difference between being hooked on heroin and being hooked on cocaine. You're still hooked, just on
exactly.
Different drugs.
So the Church of Reality wants to point out reality. We want to get Christians to think about reality. We want to get Muslims to think about reality. We want to get Jews to think about reality, because we think reality is a good thing.
Well, that's a long, hard road, because I'll tell you something. I know a lot of people who would rather live in their fantasy worlds than accept reality. Reality can be a very difficult and troubling thing. I'm sure you agree.
Well, I also, you know, have registered the domain name Church of Denial for those people who – I haven't put a website on it yet, but it's for those people who know that they should be in the Church of Reality, but they're just not ready to make that level of commitment.
So they're, you know, you should have an Egyptian layout for it, because they're in denial. Oh, I'm sorry. That's bad.
Right.
That's bad. I apologize for that.
Denial is a river in Egypt, you know.
Well, listen, Mark, I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours about this, but we're starting to run out of time here. The show is only an hour long, and I only have so much time for different segments. What I'd like to do is give you a call from time to time, and we can talk more about this issue, because it's a really fascinating issue, and I like talking about it, because I'm very much a realist. I mean, I'm a liberal Democrat, because I understand that liberalism, if you understand it in its historical context, is very reality-based politics. It's more like we've got serious problems, these are, we think these are the best ways to address them instead of just having these little fantasies about the free market ideology will run everything, or the communist fantasy that the government will run everything.
Well, that's true, but it, you know, among liberals, there's, you know, liberals have their own religions, and there's things about liberals where they're out of touch with reality too.
Well, so yeah, you get the problem where some people are focused on one specific issue within liberalism, and they focus on that so entirely that anybody else who talks about anything else, you know, oh, we don't want to hear from that. You know what I mean?
Right.
And,
you know, or if you disagree with them, you know, because there's times where liberals are just plain out and out wrong on something,
right.
And they just will not see it because, you know, liberalism has cult properties too.
Oh, sure, most definitely.
You know,
any kind of political system is like that.
Any kind, you know, political, you know, people are, you know, baseball fans, you know, neighborhood associations. The whole structure of society is built on overlapping cults.
So what really you're looking to try to do is to change human nature, because human nature is what the real problem is that's behind all of these things.
I'm not changing human nature. I want people to understand the way human nature really is.
Right. Okay.
You know, if you have an imperfect tool, you know, if I have a ruler, you know, that's supposed to be a foot long, but it's not a foot long, it's 11 and a half inches long. But I realize that it's 11 and a half inches long, then I can measure things accurately knowing that my ruler is off by a certain amount.
Right, instead of just saying, well, this is supposed to be 12 inches, and if it says it's 12 inches, then it's 12 inches, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we have brains, you know, but our brains, logic is not the most important thing that's happening in our brains, you know. I mean, things like, you know, eating, you know, defending, sleeping, mating, you know, things like that are
right.
Far more important, you know, than reason.
Right.
So, but
and
if
far
we
more powerful.
This,
I mean, the urge to mate can overcome reality. I mean, you look at all the stupid things people do just to get laid that just go beyond rationality.
Oh, you know, if I could go back in time when I was 15-year-old and cut my penis off, I'd be a billionaire right now. You know.
Oh, yeah, I know that.
I'm as stupid as Bill Clinton. You know, there's no difference between me and Bill Clinton, except he's got more opportunity than I do.
That's right. Well, you know.
You know, and the other difference between me and Bill Clinton is I know, you know, to start running earlier than he does. You know, if Bill Clinton let himself get too close, and it was like two magnets, and they just sucked in together, you know.
And of course, on the other spectrum, you have the George W. Bush, who, rather than being open to a lot of other things, is very closed-minded. You look at all the people who surround him. And they're all basically yes men, and that's the way they need it to be because they can't face reality.
Yeah, and here we got a country, you know, that's going downhill fast. You know, we're going in the hole at the rate of $1 million a minute.
And it's because we're in denial. I mean, you talk about the church
and,
of denial.
We've turned our back on reality, you know, and when you turn your back on reality, you will be punished.
That's right. And on that note, I need to cut this off because I've only got about a couple of minutes left of time here on this call card. Mark Perkel, thank you very much.
Okay.
Mark Perkel, ladies and gentlemen, the founder and current first one of the Church of Reality based in beautiful San Francisco, California. And that's going to do it.